And of course, the long term, in the long term, the way any sensible organization runs it, you send people out to be assistants fairly early in their careers. If they're good at it, mm-hmm. later on you pick them up and send them back as the attaché, you see. Mm-hmm. So you've got to start sending out majors sooner or later,
yeah.
if you're ever going to get into that kind of a mode. So we were both anxious to do that. And but I had this, I was the Army, Navy, and Air Attaché in Belgrade, and I had an assistant Air Attaché, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was a certain, I liked him very much, and his wife, they had no children, they were sort of happy-go-lucky pair, but they were terribly enjoyable. They suited the life, they were, you know, they had quite a carefree attitude on a lot of things, but he worked hard, damn hard, the first few months he was there.
Mm-hmm.
He never got a letter from DAI. And he came to me and he said, he'd know that I was getting the letters right and left, because everybody clusters around with the bags open. You can see what everybody's getting at an isolated post like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, geez, he said, you know, I'm going to give up. He said, I'm not going to keep on sending all this stuff. He said, I've asked him questions. He said, I've done all sorts of things. He said, what about this? What about that? And he never got an answer. And he just quit. He didn't. He then worked for the British and Americans, and they appreciated him helping them. But he didn't work for Ottawa anymore. He was an awfully good fellow and in every way, but he just stopped working on him because he wasn't getting any response.
Mm-hmm.
And I really couldn't blame him when he came down. But that's what happens, you see.
Yeah. Someone has to be handled properly when they're...
You've got to be handled. If you're on your own out there, you know, a whole long way from Ottawa, you begin to think, well, I wonder if there's anybody at the other end of this phone, you know. In any event, there's that sort of thing. Now, on the other hand, your home office has to write sensible questions out to you. If you start sending out silly questions from the home office, no, go away. This can do the attaché in too. Now, I can't give you any examples of how it did, but in my own case, I'm out now.
Tell Christoph on this, Tim.
It's not all that important, but I received requests largely from the Joint Intelligence Bureau, which I'll come to, who dealt with things like the resources to support war. I received a request to check out on the report they had received that a pipeline was going from Albania across Yugoslavia to the USSR, supplying the USSR with Albanian oil.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not up to the attaché in the field to question the Home Office do you know what you're talking about or not. But the first thing I did, as usual, before I went out on a field trip, I went and asked the British and Americans, and they both laughed at me. And I didn't blame them. In the face of it, it was a hell of a silly question.
Mm-hmm.
However, I thought, well, I'm not going to start back and say you're a bunch of damn fools. I made a big trip, which was hundreds of miles or hundreds of kilometers, from Belgrade down all along the Albanian border, over and inland about 50 kilometers, and all the way back up again,
mm-hmm.
checking to see if there was a pipeline anywhere. And there were only certain valleys and so on where it could have been. I mean, they wouldn't go along the mountaintops or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they'd have to cross the road somewhere or other. I couldn't see the slightest sign of it, you know, so I sent it back. But it left an awfully bad taste in my mouth. That I had been made a fool of in front of the British and Americans on a subject on which I should have been made a fool of.
Yeah. Well, were you handled at that time by one person that you knew and could
no,
trust?
No, this request, you see, the Joint Intelligence Bureau in Ottawa
mm-hmm.
Could send requests to any attaché simply by sending it to DMI and saying, would you ask the attaché and so-and-so the following question? So this came from JIB. Who it was in JIB, I haven't any idea. Well, that was one. Now, another one was a steel plant. We used to have a book there about that thick, which came from the British JIB with specific questions on your country.
Mm-hmm.
One was that the steel plant in a certain valley, which was very heavily guarded, I nearly got caught that time, very heavily guarded, but was strung out along this valley, the only major steel plant they had at that time. They wanted a panorama from one end right to the other, and the road ran right along on the side of the hill all the way past this whole thing. But they wanted a panorama, and they told you how often to stop on the road and take your picture, you see?
Mm-hmm. Highly obvious what you're doing.
Well, as it turned out, I don't know. I can't explain why I didn't get caught, but I went along taking these pictures. Mm-hmm. And this was just a peasant. You never knew where a peasant was going to pop up. Mm-hmm. Anywhere, no matter where you were, and in 2 minutes, a peasant had come walking in. But I was parked by the road, looking over this valley, looking out the window of the car, you see, and I was just taking these pictures. There was nobody around. There was a barren hillside there and a barren hillside a little bit below and so on. Nobody on the road. This peasant was asleep on the other side of the fence or something, I guess. At least he was there. Mm-hmm. And Elizabeth said, "Hey," to me, sort of thing. This guy was sort of raised up and looking around. And he looked at me. And he saw what I was doing. And he went like this. I thought, "Oh, my God. I've been caught. They'll block off the road at either end, and now I can't get out of here. I'll have to untake the film out and throw it away." It seems so. All right, I thought, well, geez, there's no woodblock person. The woodblockers, you know, the KGB. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't act like that. I just ignored it, and I went and I finished the whole roll. I never heard any more about it. Mm-hmm. I can't explain it at all. A peasant normally wouldn't even know you shouldn't take pictures. Maybe he wasn't a peasant. I don't know why. However, that's what happened. In any event, I got the end of it, and I was damn relieved that I did, and got it beyond where they could cut me off, which is they could in 2 minutes, they'd do that. Mm-hmm. And I did all my own developing in my darkroom. I'd set up a darkroom. My predecessor had set up the darkroom. Mm-hmm. But we moved the embassy, and I'd set up a new one, and had a lot of photographic equipment.
Were you living in the embassy itself?
No, lived out in the house.
So the darkroom was in the embassy?
In the embassy.
It'd have to be the embassy, wouldn't
it? Have to be in the embassy.
Because you that...
Oh, yeah, it's the only secure place we had. Yeah. And I developed all these and printed them. And the time I was there, I printed over 10,000 pictures.
Really?
Yeah.
But did you have machines to do the
I had
automatic?
Oh, no, nothing was automatic.
So it was all trays and the hanging up?
Yeah, used to do this on Sunday morning.
Did your fingernails get a bit yellow?
Oh, yeah. And my sergeant was trained to do it, too. So...
Was he your clerk? You had one sergeant as a clerk?
One. He was trained to do that in Ottawa. I had a photographic training there. In the public relations department, they had a... When I went out, we sent all our attachés there for training on photography. They'd take them out on field trips around to take pictures of various things and how to get them the right way and all that kind of thing. That was part of their training.
What kind of camera would you...
Leica.
Leica?
I had a special one. I made a special plea for it, and I got a Minox as well.
Yeah, little toy ones. Yeah. They look like toys, but they're not.
And for the, I made another special plea, and I got a 400mm lens for the Leica. Mm. It was that long and that big around. Yeah. I could take pictures a mile away, and you could tell what artillery piece it was from the picture.
Yeah, even with the massive enlargement. Well, the beauty of that kind of lens is that it's so beautifully made. I mean, the quality of enlargement.
A couple of $1,000 in those days. Yeah. I don't know how I ever got it, but they sent
it
to
me.
Oh, no, that was government property.
Shame.
Oh, that was government property. And so was that. All the equipment was.
Yeah.
But I bought a lot of my own while I was over there and brought it home with me, but then I had to leave all the government stuff there. Mm-hmm. But I developed all these, and I would send back, I'd paste them together in a rough fashion, sent them all back to, I insisted, and I was a damn fool, I would send it back to our own JIB, so our own JIB could then send it to London, and get the QDOS for our own JIB.
Why did that make you a fool?
Oh, there was nothing on this one, except that I'm coming to it.
Okay.
I sent it back to them, and they sent me a copy of what they sent to London. Mm-hmm. They selected about two or three of these out of here and sent that to London, instead of what London wanted. Now this, all that blinking work, and London wanted a joint panorama that everything was connected. So they picked out a couple of the best ones, or three or four, and they sent that instead of the whole report.
Mm-hmm. And you spent this time gluing them all together?
Oh, I'm taking all those pictures at quite some risk, you know.
Yeah.
You never can tell when one of these sentries has got a pair of binoculars on you.
So the jerks in Ottawa took the panorama and cut it up?
Yeah. Well, this is that sort of thing just pulls the rug out from under you. The same thing happened on a report that I did a trip through Bulgaria, mm-hmm. which was a special piece of finagling. And the Americans gave me a very detailed brief on it. what to look for practically every 2 or 3 kilometers of the road. They knew the route I'd be taking. I went in through, from Yugoslavia into Sofia and out through Turkey. Mm-hmm. And I cooked this whole thing up as an argument that I thought would be accepted. By golly, it was. I was the only one who was ever allowed to do it. And it was a very special argument. And I took one of Anderson's mottos was that you wait with the Russians or the Iron Curtain until they got the charm turned on, mm-hmm. then ask them for what you want.
Never while ask, they're charming.
While they're being charming over some little incident, ask them for something, then you'll get it.
Yeah.
So I did. I waited until I thought the time was right when I asked for it, and I got it. It just worked like almost a dream.
Mm-hmm.
However, the Americans gave me a very, very detailed report, a questionnaire on what I wanted. And it was all in teletype, you know. And I had to memorize all this because I didn't dare carry it with me. By golly, I answered every single question on that, and I wrote up a big report on it. And I never heard anything back from the Americans. I sent it back to our own JIBC,
mm-hmm.
and they were due to handle it to the Americans. I think I sent the request in through the American Army attaché, not through our. It didn't come from our own JIB mm-hmm. at all. But the request I sent to the Americans, I wanted it from the Americans. He sent it back to Ottawa, back to Washington, and they sent it back to him, and they gave it to me.
Mm-hmm. Did the Americans not have an attaché in
you? Yeah, they did, but they couldn't travel on most of this road. They couldn't travel through the border areas. There was a 200-mile zone between, 200-kilometer zone between the Turkish border and inside Bulgaria that they weren't allowed to travel on.
Americans only?
Oh, no, anybody. Nobody was around.
Oh, so
diplomats or anybody.
This is why it was such a coup for you.
Oh, it was an absolute coup on both sides. It took 3 hours before we got through the customs. And both these sensitive areas, they put a Bulgarian officer in the car with me
really?
To go that part of the route. I had to try and take pictures with them in the front seat with me.
Were you able to?
Yeah.
You had the little mimics, I guess.
Yeah. And Elizabeth is sitting in the back seat, and I'd make comments on things, and she was all my amanuensis. She wrote things down all the time on all our trips.
Mm.
And she was busy making notes even when he was there. He didn't understand English, of course. Either one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a marvelous opportunity. So I got all this. I answered every single question they had. There's a plant at so-and-so. It's for road construction. Is there any evidence of tar being used? All this sort of thing. It was quite a detailed thing, you see. Well, I went there, took pictures of the tar chimney smoking away there and barrels of it all over the place. That's the kind of answers I got. And then there was a tank training area. They wanted to know what was going on there. It was the Joseph Stalin III was a new tank at that time. Well, these were Joseph Stalin IIIs they had there. She says, you see a tank, for goodness sake. Get a picture of it, see, and so on. Well, it was mm-hmm. it was too far away, but we're driving down the road. There was a hill. I knew it was in the tank train. I was looking all over bare hills there. And, you know, I was like, my golly, there's the Joseph Stalin tank right on the skyline.
Yeah, the Bulgarian is sitting right beside you, right?
No, not that one. No, that was before. No, we were on our own, going through the middle of the country.
Mm-hmm.
No, he wasn't there, but we had a tail about 100 yards behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And if we stopped, he'd stop. And then we go on. We stopped and cooked breakfast one time. He stopped too. Wait till we cook breakfast and get out of here.
The idea was that he wouldn't be noticed if he stopped.
Yeah. You know, it's quite obvious. But, geez, there's this Joseph Stalin tank where I didn't carry a pair of binoculars because they're too damned obvious, you know, especially going through the border. But I had a telescope, which I got for the job. It was about that long, but when you pulled it out, you know, it was about this long, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So I got out my telescope, stopped the car. Taking a bead on this tank, and of course we knew a lot of the things that wanted to be known about it, you know, what armament, the kind of thing, and whether 2 machine guns in the front and not, and all that kind of thing. You could see all of that without a picture, because it was too far away for a picture.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly didn't have my 400 millimeter with me. I didn't have the Leica either with me, I don't think. No, I didn't have the Leica with me. I didn't think I'd get it through the border. In any event, I get this thing into focus, and I'm looking at this thing. And here's the guy with his head sticking out of the, you know, his shoulders out of the turret, and he's got a great big pair of binoculars looking at me. Oh, gosh!
Heart attack.
Well, this guy could have come down the hill, blocked the road, and he'd have had me right there.
Mm-hmm.
So So I stepped on the gas, and I don't know what he thought, but in any event, he didn't do anything, and I got past the bloody place without him. But in any event, I confirmed the presence of Joseph Stalin tanks and a few of the details on it, not very much. But that's the kind of thing that went on. It was a fabulous trip, absolutely fabulous. From the point of view of getting things, it was hardship. I don't know about that. But when I sent that report back, I don't think they even sent it to Washington. They didn't regard all this as worth very much. Because I asked, I thought I was going to get some kudos out of Washington when it finally got through back to them. So I asked the attaché to find out about it, and he said, well, the people that asked the question never got any answer on it. Well, after all that bloody work, that information was really no use to Ottawa in itself. Mm-hmm. With only use to the people who wanted to know it. It was a big organization. That one was a total waste, and I felt very bitter over that, you know.
Would you, I guess, did you or would you ever take the matters in your own hands after having this failure with Ottawa and sending the information yourself through an American attaché?
I never did, but I wish I had now.
Yeah.
I really, that was one of my major mistakes as an attaché, to send things back that went to JIB. Not that went to Ottawa. Not that went to my own people back then. Mm-hmm. Only the stuff that went to JIB, and I was a fool in doing that all the way through, because I would have got a lot. It would have benefited me in the field much more to have sent the damn thing right back to Washington. They would have had a better... They would have got what they wanted in some cases anyway. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing, I have JIB on my list to explain how and what stage it was in, and they were only playing at intelligence at that time, as you could well imagine from what I said.
Well, did you perhaps write to JIB and say, come on, get off your horse there, send it on to the Americans?
We had at least I had established a strict rule that nobody wrote to our attachés except through us. Or the Air Force could write on Air Force subjects. Mm-hmm. But we wouldn't allow JIB or anybody to write to our attaché, or the attaché to write to anybody else except us. So I would have had to go through DMI to get to JIB. I couldn't write direct. And I didn't write, because it had taken a long time. Mm-hmm. And I had the... You're busy anyway, but I had the feeling that the last thing in the world you want is to get into a fight with the Home Office. And once you do,
that's going to be recalled, I guess.
Well, they've got the upper hand on everything, and there's no use trying to tell them what to do from the field. Yeah. It's a fool's game.
Well, the perspective is so different. I mean, they can't see what you're up against.
Well, a lot of them can't. Yeah. They can't picture what you're at all.
Well, they see their job as being of prime importance, and your job isn't. I mean, you're simply gathering the wrong information. We're doing the intelligence analysis, that's part of it.
And I explain that because this business of constant communication with the fellow who's out there a long, long way, mm-hmm. and he's got really no support at all, the rest of your embassy and so on, and don't know what you're doing. If they do, they shouldn't. Yeah. And you're pretty much on your own, you know. Well, you need somebody to keep in touch with, somebody you think is looking at what you're writing and then commenting on it, mm-hmm. doing something useful about it. But
well, it's funny, in any, it's a silly thing to say, but in a John Le Carré novel, I mean, much is made of that personalized relationship between the handler, say, Smiley, mm-hmm. and his agent in the field. I don't know whether you read Smiley's People or not.
Yes.
Remember, he and the old Russian, and he went straight back to his handler because he trusted him.
I knew, they say Smiley was Oldfield.
Yeah.
I knew Oldfield extremely well.
Did you?
Yes.
Well, from what you've read of what Le Carré has written on Smiley, does it coincide?
Oh, yeah, it could have been easily enough. Yeah. Mind you, it was glamorized, didn't it?
Well, did Oldfield have a wife that played around?
I didn't know his family life at all. I only knew him when he was in MI6, of course.
Yeah.
Every time I went there, I saw him. I can't say I got on with him very well. it wasn't his fault. It wasn't no personality crash. We just had different policies. Our two governments. However, I knew him very well, and you know, I knew people in his shop who knew him, and they were pretty free in talking about it. Once you get in there, you know, you pick up a lot. Yeah, I was interested. No, he died, you know. Oldfield died.
A few years ago.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Are you still out of three?
No, we have, yeah. So much for the attachés. I think I'm pretty well finished with them. Mm-hmm. You might have a minute for a story here, which is no...
Oh, please, yeah.
We had an attaché come out there, British attaché. He was the air attaché. And he was the kind who might have made a comedian, but he certainly wouldn't make an attaché. I think he was a damn good comedian. His name was George Lurwell. I'll never forget him. But he was, you know, everybody was regarding him as a joke, and he was clever. You know, whatever about that.
It was a facade then put up by him.
Oh, yeah, he's quite clever, but he was witty, he could glam off, you know, or puns, all that sort of thing, but he didn't care a hoot about the work, because his attitude was, well, you just say I don't have much of an Air Force, I'm unemployed. That was about all, you see. And,
probably a good assessment, too, at the time.
Well, it wasn't too bad when it came down to it. There wasn't too much to learn about them. They had American and British planes, that kind of thing. Now, what the hell was there to learn, you see?
Mm-hmm.
So, but we were in a group together, the British, Americans, Canadians, and Lurwell, among other things that we were talking about, you know, it was away from the office. Lurwell said, he said that. Blighters, he said. He'd been there about 2 or 3 months by then. So I got a message from him. They said, you've been out there all this time and we never had a report from you. Get busy, kind of thing or something. He said, imagine treating a person like that. But he said, I'll fix those guys. He said, these I have seen something around this country. Good an actor, too, you know. He said, yeah. I said, so I told him. He said, by the town of so-and-so, 2 kilometers north, an airfield, length of the runway, all this kind of thing you've seen, so on. Squadron, three squadrons of so-and-so aircraft on it, and this kind of thing, you've seen so-and-so, and he said,
was any of it true?
Watched there, he said, they were doing so-and-so kind of training. There, he said, I thought, well, that'll fix them. He said, what happens? He said, I get a letter back from the airfield people saying, hey, this is a new airfield, why hasn't it been reported before? He said, this is the first report of these kind of airplanes in the Yugoslav Air Force. He said to myself, I said to myself, my God, what have I done? Good for a laugh. I don't know whether any of it was true, but that's what he said about. That was his attitude.
Aren't you going to break off?
Yeah, I won't tell you that.
Only if you promise to let me have one of the cookies on the drive home.
Oh, God.
Oh, yes.
Last year, you always let me take a cookie with
you. Here, have the whole lot.
No, I'll take one. I'll get 2 fat.
I found